Acting for Radio. Welcome to the Midwest Radio Theater Workshop's Technical Assistance Best Of Series. You'll be hearing the voices and thoughts of some of our favorite workshop trainers and performers from the past 10 years. This isn't everything they said or meant to say, but it is a good place to start. As you listen, be distracted by your own thoughts and experiences on the subject. Think about how you'd play the part, how you'd get inside the character, and how you'd spark the listener's imagination. After all, radio theater is art. It's personal, it's fun, and as an actor, you're right where you want to be, in front of the microphone. First, Peter Bergman and Richard Fish introduce you to your best friend, your voice.
I think the secret of acting on radio is relaxation. The fact that you've got to be able to relax into your character. And one of the things that might help you to relax is that you're much better than you think you are as a radio actor. This isn't just cheap psychology, it's really true. Most people make their mistake in radio by thinking they don't sound right to themselves. They're trying to listen to themselves as they speak, which tightens them up, which takes them out of context with their character.
Suppose you've been to an event. Something has, you've attended some event that's just really great and you had a wonderful time, and then you go back home and you're talking to a friend of yours and you're telling them about it. Oh, and we went and we did this, and boy, it was really exciting. You can't believe. And then this happened, and so forth. And you get that excitement in your voice. You get that feeling in your voice. And if you had a recording of that and played it back, you would realize that it sounds quite good. And maybe when you get on the air and you're in front of the microphone, maybe you're kind of afraid to let yourself go like that. Again, you have to remember that you're not on a soapbox on the radio. When you're talking into a microphone, you are not standing on a soapbox addressing a crowd. You are simply talking to one person. Radio is heard one at a time. So you just have to learn to think of the microphone as one person. And moreover, not just any person, but somebody you know, somebody who knows you, a friend of yours who likes you. If the radio speaker has his mind thinking of, well, there's 100,000 people listening to every word I say, and he has that mental image of 100,000 people all standing in a crowd looking up at him, well, he's going to get real stiff, and it becomes much harder to relax and let yourself be natural and normal.
You can hear in a lot of people that sound amateur. The reason they sound amateur is that they're tight. They're just tightened. Their voices are constrained. They begin to breathe fast so they can't take good pauses. All the things that pauses on radio are twice as important as pauses on the live stage. Because on the live stage, you may be pausing with your voice but making a body action, so it's not a pause, right? You're drinking a cup of coffee or stabbing someone, you know, silently. On radio, you don't stab silently. Snicker, snicker. Oh, I'm being stabbed. Take another. Knock, 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 you know. But when you pause on radio, if nothing else is happening, that pause is indeed significant. So in order to be able to take advantage of the timing, you've got to be able to relax into your character, and relaxation allows you to totally become the character. If you're not nervous while you perform, your voice will be under your control, and you will be able to create that character.
Probably the hardest thing about radio theater is time. There never seems to be enough of it. There's never enough time to rehearse or record, so your voice has to be practiced, relaxed, and ready before you even walk into the studio. Peter and Shelley Carlson suggest some exercises.
How many of you read out loud? Ah, well, we're way ahead of the game. I've really gotten into being read to and reading. Reading out loud and reading to another person, reading novels to other people, is a wonderful way of training your voice. Because, first of all, it teaches you quick reading. If you're going to be doing a lot of radio acting, you've got to be able to pick up that script, in many cases, and go right with it. And you develop your voice. It's very important to use your voice. It is a muscle. It's not a cliche. It truly is a muscle. And you must be careful with it. So one thing is read out loud. Use your voice every day. I found the thing that has improved my voice most is the fact that I've never had a radio in my car. Because of that, I use my time in the car, which living in Los Angeles is most of my time, singing, talking, thinking my thoughts out loud. It just gives my voice a lot of practice. So by the time I go to do something, it's rich. And the only way you can, and the other thing, all right, not a few little voice techniques that I was taught, If you want to expand the range of your voice, which has a lot to do with the kind of characterizations that you can apply yourself to, practice by talking and singing. Singing is even better in the lowest range you can achieve. By singing low, you will find that over a year of singing low, you will increase the high part of your voice by at least half an octave. The high range is a very important range to increase because it's very effective. Low is good, but you'll find more characterizations can be achieved through the tenor and the soprano. But also, when women you speak low, it increases your alto-ness, which is very important for certain types of characterizations, and it's just very good for your health, too. It improves your breathing, throat size, all that sort of stuff is affected. Okay, so read out loud, sing or speak low. You usually have to do it by yourself because friends are put off by having you sit there, "Oh, sweet chariot, hey, come on." You know, at the salad bar, you know.
This you might want to write down a little bit. I mean, you don't have to, but I'm going to give you a real specific way to do this little exercise. Take a look at the first, say you've got 15 minutes worth of reading there. Mark out three paragraphs for yourself. A real good thing to do is read Grimm's fairy tales, and choose Grimm's and not the more modern ones, because the more modern ones are slightly more expository. So the only reason that Grimm's is good is because there's a lot of action. There's a lot of bad guys, good guys, big wolves, adjectives, a lot of character voices. The first time, read it once to yourself and find out what's intellectually happening in the story, right? Then the second time, read it aloud and find out what you trip over. Because that's another good education skill for yourself as an actor. Do I chronically trip over THs when they're connected to a word that starts with F that's next? Well, if you do, then make up a list for yourself and put it on your refrigerator or someplace where you see it every day. Correct your own diction problems. It's not impossible to do. The five guys. Well, if I chronically say the five guys, then fix that. 15 vocabulary segments on a piece of paper and stick it on your refrigerator. T-H-E with a word that starts with F next. Find that out about yourself. Find out about what you're going to trip over, just from a strictly technical point of view. Okay, so that's step number two. Okay, step number three is go over it and read it in a very big bravado sort of way. Use rising and falling inflection to the max, right? So that indeed what you want to do there a little bit is break your habitual stress pattern before it even starts. So now you've just done it once for diction and vowel problems, and now the second time, make it really big like it. And then the wolf said to the little girl, you know, make it big. Hear your voice in a larger context, in a more interesting framework. So try it that way, right? Now then the next time, go over it for the truth of it. So that you're making a very specific, truthful, really you're feeling the moments that are there, right? And then the next time, go over it and combine what you've done so far. Then find out where you're lacking. And then find out, do I chronically lack there? Do I chronically, after doing this, come up with a very truthful, very boring reading here? Very boring acting job. Do I chronically do that? Is one of my faux pas here that in order to be believable, I make everything into a three-note performance? And then if you do that, then work a little bit harder on step number four, with more rising and falling inflection, just really as an exercise, and then incorporate it. So that the point is the incorporative aspect. You're not going to get better by thinking about it or by reading about it. Acting is doing. Radio acting is still doing and speaking. So if you want to get better at it, practice.
When you're looking to do more than one voice, when you're even looking to do just your own voice, the thing that you have to use first and foremost are your ears. Simply listen to it. The best way to develop your own voice is to tape record it and listen back. You can't really listen to it while you're speaking. For one thing, nobody can really perform and listen critically at the same time, and for another thing, you have bone conduction sound coming up into your ears, and it really doesn't sound the same anyway. So tape record yourself. Even with the cheapest cassette player you can get, it's enough to help you out.
Until they like their voice and like to fool around in that media, it's real common to have some problems there. Ooh, that sounds terrible. Ooh, I didn't know I sounded like that. Ooh, such sibilance, you know. Oh, no, that sounds really phony. All those things, it takes a little bit to get over that. Then, of course, you know, after you like it, you usually like it a lot.
Understanding your voice and body as an instrument is important. Richard and Shelley discuss breathing, rhythm, and diction.
Much of breathing is quite natural. It does not, much of good breathing is quite natural and does not require training. People can get themselves into problems with breathing when they're not doing these other things we've just talked about. When their head is in the wrong space and they're tense or stiff or fearful or something like that. That's when you start having more breathing problems because the whole system is kind of out of whack here, is kind of out of kilter. Breathing is something you have to pay attention to without letting it bother you. When I do radio commercials, in that kind of situation, sometimes you have to do the script 20, 30 times to get it the way the person wants to hear it. And I had the situation where there was a speech that I had to make, and it just wasn't coming out right. And it was something about, I wasn't emphasizing the right word, or I wasn't projecting the meaning that he wanted. And the solution turned out to be to move my breath, the place where I did an intake of breath, after doing it. And, you know, after doing it 10 or 15 times, we finally realized, oh, but look, If you breathe here, even though it's a little earlier and you don't quite need to breathe yet, but if you breathe here so you can take this whole next sentence without a pause, then the whole thing works.
People have natural rhythm. I mean, one of the first experiences that you have as a human being is that you breathe, and that's your first acquaintance with rhythm, you know, because breath is rhythm. Now, sometimes you stick a microphone in front of an actor, and all of a sudden, he has not enough breath to finish his sentence, has not enough breath to do the simplest of phrasing, or gives you the same rhythm again and again and again and again, right? And so that, let's say you're doing something that's more along the classical vein, and you got a guy that just insists upon delivering every line like he's a used car salesman from Chicago. Oh, really? Do you want it? You know, and what you really want is, oh, really? Well, do you want that? You know, and you just keep getting bum 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 bum, or you keep getting the opposite, a slow rhythm. I mean, it doesn't make any difference what the rhythm is, but if you get somebody that's stuck in a rhythm, well, you're going to have problems there. So begin to educate yourself every day, and one of the easiest ways to educate yourself to rhythm is to listen to music, good music, but truly listen. So that if you feel like you have rhythm problems in the way that you use speech yourself, then put 5 minutes worth of good classical music on and listen to the rhythm. Really listen with your whole self, not simply with your ears, but see if you can listen to the rhythm and find how does it make you want to move your body, different parts of the music. I mean, how does that affect you? And what effect does it have on your feeling body or your emotional body? I mean, some music makes you want to soar, you know, it makes you feel great about life and about yourself. Other, you know, pieces that are real moody certainly do that to you. And be aware of those feelings and let them flow through you. So it's like an actor sensitivity lesson. But it's a very important one, especially if you want to attune yourself to be a more sensitive instrument. A second step to that, in a practical aspect, is be sensitive to the rhythms around you. Certainly, New York City has a different rhythm on the street than Columbia, Missouri does, right? So be aware of that and let that affect you. Because if you're supposed to be playing a character from New York, you need to have that rhythm. You know, you need to have that rhythm in your speech and in your body for radio drama. Obviously, we need it in the speech, but, you know, people talk faster and things like that. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, then you'll get that naturally if you're aware of it as the actor. How fast does somebody walk ahead of you on the street? Be aware of rhythm in everyday experiences. And see if you can, and let people's rhythm affect you, and then use the opposite exercise. And maintain your own rhythm within a situation where everybody's rhythm is kind of skitsy. So let's say you are walking down the street in New York and everybody's bobbling away, you know, they're going to work or they're going here or they're going there, and make the exercise that you maintain your own rhythm, which happens to be that you've got 25 minutes to get where you're going and you want to enjoy the city. So you're looking around, you know, you're having a great time. and then do the opposite. Let people's rhythm affect you. You feel like you're hustling and bustling, and you walk into a room where everybody's pretty laid back and calm and enjoying one another's company. See how easily you can switch into that rhythm. So that's a very good actor sensitivity exercise. Then the third step of that is be aware of how you use rhythm in your speech.
You have to learn that pronunciation and diction, you have to get, just by doing it, you have to get to the point where that is easy enough, comes naturally enough, that you're not going to be constantly worrying about it and your mind will be distracted. One thing that helps a lot is to remember to open your mouth and speak with your mouth relatively wide open. When you're talking lazy, you don't open your mouth very far. You know, just kind of leave your mouth closed and so on. Mm-hmm. When you want to have good diction, simply remember to let that jaw drop a little further and open the mouth wider. Your diction happens in your mouth, not in your throat, in your mouth. So we're talking about the muscles of your lips and your tongue and your chin going up and down. And it is the control of those muscles that you have to deal with.
And that is really the hardest thing to do because, you know, you don't have your facial expressions, although frequently if you use your facial muscles, if you set your jaw in certain ways, if you need to get that kind of tension, or if, you know, you need to be very relaxed and communicate, you know, you try to get the muscles in your face to cooperate with you. All the energy that you would use in hand gesture or shoulder or anything of that nature all then comes through your face and your voice and your position to the microphone.
So, take what you know about developing your voice and get on mic. Practice with microphones as much as you can. Let's continue with Judith Walcott, David Osman, and Peter Bergman about techniques.
Your microphone is, you know, your best friend and your worst enemy in radio because, you know, at the same time that you're communicating character in your voice, you have to maintain a technical position relative to the microphone. Now, that's what you have to remember is that the microphone is the entire audience. It is everyone. It's also, you know, it has this relationship. It is your lover. It is your enemy. It is casts of thousands. It is a telephone call. I mean, it is, you know, it's your link to the audience that you visualize as you're acting.
You want to get yourself a position in front of the microphone with your script. Remember, this microphone there's nothing down here. So if you keep your script down here, your script is going to be quiet. You can work with your script on the other side of the mic, like that. What you do not want to do is ever have your script in front of your face, because obviously that's going to take away your voice. You can work with it on the other side, and you want to change those pages. We don't do that. That's from all those old 40s radio movies. You don't drop your scripts because people are going to step on them, and they always land on the edge and make a much larger impact sound. Terribly noisy stuff. And then find yourself a good, comfortable situation where you can address the microphone. Feet planted. Don't ever stand with your feet. Don't ever stand without that balance, because without that balance, you have no way of altering the basic straight ahead voice coming up, going out into the microphone shot. If you're like this, you know, already you're relaxed. You've got your legs crossed. Don't put your hands in your pocket. Everybody gets really nervous, you know, and starts fiddling with their keys and stuff. And, you know, even pros going in for reading, you know, they're nervous, and you find your hands. Just script in hand. Script takes two hands. Microphone takes concentration. You've lined your scripts with highlighter. And I always quote Nick Danger's line, keep your thumb next to your lines, you won't get confused about where you are. It is very useful to keep a thumb down. If you have like 6 or 7 lines away from where you are, put your thumb down there. Mark the next line when you come in. Because you can get so wrapped up in what's going on that, you know, suddenly you're, oh, it's me.
When I do radio shows, I'm always moving in front of the mic.
You know, and I play the microphone as if it's an audience in a way, a very intimate audience, which isn't a bad idea, by the way, if you think about the microphone as your audience. Sounds a little strange, but it makes radio very intimate, which it really is anyway, so that when you stand back, it becomes your larger audience. When you move in, it becomes an intimate moment.
Michael Dolby adds this thought.
The most important job of an actor is to communicate to the audience. It sounds so simple, but it's not. And in radio, all you have is your voice. To work to communicate the ideas of the author clearly and economically. You can go through all kinds of preparation, breathing, sense memory, warm-ups, playing theater games in rehearsal. And when you perform, you, the actor, may have all kinds of experiences. You may feel like you've come to a special understanding of the character. But ultimately, the most important concern is what gets across to the audience. Learning to listen carefully. What have you communicated? Did it get past the microphone?
On to auditions. David, Shelley, and Norman Gio give their views.
I tend to like radio that brings out all the naturalism of the voices. I am usually really put off by somebody who comes in doing me or doing somebody that we are all familiar with as a demonstration of their skill. I don't want to hear that. When I hear you read, I want to hear your voice. And then if we want to modify what your voice is, we can ask you to do that.
And ask as many questions as you can. I mean, there would certainly be some kind of character breakdown that would, you know, something like Mary Lou, age 35, from a small farm in Kansas, loses her father in the middle of the play and moves to the big city to start her life anew, okay? So you'd certainly want to ask some specific questions before you started. Did Mary Lou always live in a small town? Did she ever go to college? Has she been married or had any children? Things that will affect the way that you're going to deal with language in the script. So you might want to gear your questions there, you know, toward the radio aspect of it, which might involve, has Mary Lou always lived in this same small town? Which is going to give you an idea of what idiomatic speech she's going to use. See, so you do want to gear it there. Not that you don't care, it'll give you some more specific qualities, but it's certainly more important to ask, has she always lived in this small town, so that you find out what her idiomatic speech is going to be then, has she always had a weight problem, or something like that, right? Or does she dye her hair, right? You want to get something that you can utilize in the voice, in that interpretive part of it, so that you'd want to find that out, and what her education is, right? So because the way people use language usually has a great deal to do with their education and what part of the country they were raised in. So you can get those, a couple of specific questions. And then, you know, like any cold reading, then you go with your best shot, so to speak, using a memory of feeling and a memory of imagination, even within the context from the cold script.
As an actor, you have probably four places that you really perform. One of them is in front of the mirror. Another is with your family, your mother, your father, your brothers and sisters, if you have that kind of relationship. Then you have the actual stage or film or mic performance, and then you have the audition. The first two are highly subjective. You can't trust them in terms of feedback, just your own feeling. Don't underestimate the audition as a key place for your growth. Don't just look at it as a place to get rejected or to get a job. This is a serious place to put out your wares. You're in probably one of the hardest, most critical environments you'll ever be in. And if you learn to judge your own performance within that environment, it can really help you grow, as opposed to being just a place to land a part.
Okay, you got the part, and you've got the script. Michael Dolby and Shelley Carlson.
When you begin working on a play, the most important thing is to pay close attention to what the author has given you. Before you make big choices about how your character feels or this is what the author means, take some time. Read carefully. Don't feel pressured that you must deliver at the first rehearsal. The author has spent days, weeks, or months mulling over where to put different words and how to develop ideas and situations. So pay attention to what is there before you impose ideas or interpretations upon it.
The writer expresses his dramatic action through words, especially in the radio medium, which the actor acts. And that's important for the actor to realize that you still want them to be acting and not just speaking the words, right? You want that involvement there. They are acting. They're not just reading it, even though, of course, they're reading it. I mean, you know, we don't memorize the scripts, but you still want that feeling, that interplay there. Okay, that's very important. And that, indeed, because that's all they have are the words, that it's sort of their artistic duty, you know, to be very, not careful, but respectful, perhaps, would be the right word, of the structure of the drama, and to feel like the writer is not their enemy, but their very best friend in this medium, right? That because he's got all the stuff right there. And that can be very important for people who have done a lot of improvisation or a lot of non-scripted stuff, because there's a tendency to not have a great deal of respect, or not a disrespect for language, but indeed that so much of it's visual and that so much of it has to do with the actor rapport, which though is usually a visual context rather than one that's an audio context, so that indeed there is more of an emphasis on the language in radio drama, because that's really like all you've got.
Here, Shelley gives us a specific idea of how to look at your character within the context of the story.
Dramatic action has a beginning, a middle, and an end. In almost every play, each character, even if it's a small character, has some transformation that happens to them, so that they are not the same person at the beginning of the script that they are at the end of the script. Now, as simple as that may seem, observe how the action builds and don't play the end emotion at the beginning of the play. So I've got an example written in here about Ophelia. What is Ophelia about? Oh, Ophelia is about a sad girl who goes crazy, right? All right, well, now that may be what happened to Ophelia in the end. But in the beginning, she's a wealthy young girl in love, right?
Now, let's listen to Iris Peters build her character before, during, and after her character's crisis in City Desk, written by Mark Shepard and directed by Norman Gio. Dee Dee Newport plays Melissa. Before.
Hey, Melissa, we're looking pretty good tonight.
For once.
Yeah. Try calling Jennifer again. She's probably pretty upset. You know, her alleged father was supposed to take her to the movies. You should have seen her last night. She microwaved this sausage biscuit on high for 55 minutes.
Oh, great.
Yeah, she's learning. Hey, Rachel.
Yeah?
You see Beam over there?
Uh-huh.
Wander across the room and see if he's taking notes or what. I bet you he's talking to his girlfriend again. Either that.
Yeah.
He's got that phone propped up to his head just to look busy.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Cartwell, get on the scene. It's 5519 Michigan. This is a fully involved fire on the upper floors of the apartment building. We need at least three
more
companies.
Oh, my God.
What?
Shh. Turn that scanner up.
During.
Yes, sir, I know. That fire is at my apartment, so I've got kind of an emergency here with my daughter. You know I'm going to have to leave.
What did you want me to do?
Not now. Yeah, I know we've got early deadlines, but this is my daughter I'm talking about. I'm not going to edit a story about my own daughter's dying in a fire.
But I've got this early run.
Not now. I can't believe this guy. Yeah. Yes, sir, I remember that movie. It was called Towering Inferno. No, sir, I don't know if Ernest Borgnine was in that. Listen, I'm calling Lester in. If he's not that sick, he's coming in here, and I'm leaving anyway.
Maypole to the city desk. Robert L. Maypole to the city desk.
I'm sending Maypole out on a story about my own daughter's death. Jesus. Hey, Jake, turn that ball game off. Turn it off.
Take it easy. She'll be all right. Come on. I hate to say it, but Mr. Henry's on line 3 again.
Just cut him off or transfer him down to circulation. I don't care. Don't say anything.
After.
It's Bob Maypole on the radio. He said the taxi just wrecked, but not to worry because he's okay. And he said he can see smoke in the distance.
Oh, lovely. I'm so glad he's safe. Hey, do ask him to give us a call. No, wait. Better yet, we'll send Beam and Blankenship to the fire. Tell Maypole there's a huge story just for him. Prize winner. Tell him to go to 3911 Winchester and ask for Mr. Henry.
It's a white over 10 Impala license Tango Robert Adam 419.
Did you hear the subtle rise and fall of Jane's emotions? A very realistic portrayal by Iris Peters. We'll continue with character development on the other side. Please, flip the tape.
Is this the Department of Lost Dogs?
Yeah.